Hello, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. As always, I'm so grateful that we are all here to join and strengthen these loving ideas for one another in our minds. Before we dive in, which if you have your book handy, you can turn to Cameo 27. We'll be reading I Need Do Nothing in just a bit. Let's begin with a meditation. So just coming to a comfortable seated position, closing your eyes if you are able. As we'll read about in our reading tonight, other pathways might teach that we need to do certain things to become holy. But A Course in Miracles teaches us that holiness is who and what we already are. We don't need to do anything to recognize our holiness and the holiness of our brothers and our sisters. So in our minds, just dropping into this idea that no matter for yourself, what you think about yourself, how you feel about yourself, things you think you should fix or do, seeing if you can just drop beneath that to your holiness within. Even just having willingness to go there. We don't have to do this perfectly. It's just the intention. The intention to connect with our holiness. And A Course in Miracles is also a unique pathway because it is about healing through relationship. So I invite you to either think of someone in your life. It can be anyone who you have a challenge with, who you don't. Maybe you can even look at the screen or on our participant list here and just connecting with this idea that those other people that we see, both on the screen or in our lives, they share the same holiness that's within us. So no matter what that other person may do or say or think, their holiness is unchanged. So it's like we invite the holiness within us to join with the holiness in others. And if it's helpful, you can even, again, look at the screen, look at our participant list. There's 20 something of us here at the moment. And all of us just joining in this space of holiness, recognizing that it is in ourselves and in one another. And this applies to anybody listening to this recording after the fact, including them in this exercise as well. Sharing this holy instant with one another. Being willing to have holy encounters with anyone who we may meet going forward, either in the rest of our day today, maybe tomorrow. And from this space of holiness within, just resting here. This is that space in which we need do nothing, because our holiness just is. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. Let's take a nice, deep, mindful breath in and out. And slowly and gently coming to our perception of right here, right now. And again, welcome everyone. I see all of you on the phone and here with us on this gathering. And we're going to, in just a moment, read cameo number 27. It's called I Need Do Nothing. And I love this teaching. But before we do that, I'd like to invite Dave to share a couple paragraphs that Dave said he found in a book by Regina Dawn Akers. Am I remembering that correctly, Dave? It's disappearing into your sea.
Right.
What's the name of the book?
The Holy Spirit's Interpretation of the New Testament. And Regina channeled this material, and it was kind of interesting the way she did this. She was told to read a passage or a verse in the Bible, and then as long as she felt like she knew what it meant, the information wouldn't come through. So she had to surrender, you know, her own idea of what it meant, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times. So talk about an exercise in surrender.
For sure.
So anyway, this is on page 134 of this. And this really spoke to me of just the, you know, getting through the difficult parts of our journey. So it says, let's see, step away from what you know and come with me. And this is a capital M, me. I will show you what you don't know. I will show you, I will show you what you don't think is possible and prove to you that it is true. Let's see, the journey that we take together will seem to take great faith. Do not worry that you do not have enough faith to complete the journey, for if you have faith to start, you have faith to complete it. Let's see, on this journey, through this course that we will complete together, you will come to see yourself as dirty, unworthy, and untouchable. All means of self-hatred will come up in you, but do not be alarmed. Your blemishes come to me, capital M, for healing. Your hatred comes to me, capital M, through your faith and willingness that it may be healed. Hatred is nothing more but a desire for love that believes love is absent. In my light, a capital M and capital L, in my light, it shall know love is not absent. In this knowledge, it is healed. Spend time with me, and this is the Holy Spirit talking, you know, okay, obviously. Spend time with me when hatred comes upon you. Retreat to a quiet place and ask for my help. Wait in peace and confidence for my answer. I invite your unhealed spots into the light that I may heal them. I will not abandon you when your unhealed spots answer my call and step forth to be healed. Anyway, that I thought was informative and comforting. So. I hope somebody else does too. So.
I sure do. Thank you. You're getting thumbs up.
Okay, cool.
Thank you for sharing that, Dave. That's a really beautiful. I've actually always wanted to read that book, The Holy Spirit's Interpretation of the New Testament. And I haven't, so it's nice. It's a little, not only motivation, I have such a long list of books I want to read, but it's beautiful to hear that. I've heard really good things about it. So
good. Great.
Thank you, Dave. That was awesome. You're getting some thanks in the chat too. All right. So with that sort of setting the stage, that's absolutely a beautiful reminder that, I don't know, what is coming up for me at the moment is just this idea of just emptying ourselves and handing it all over. We're going to read cameo 27. It's called I Need Do Nothing. So this is on page 1837 of the cameo essays. I Need Do Nothing, which often I'll just say many times I've heard, and I've probably actually, I'll just even speak about my own experience in my family. I've heard this teaching, I need you nothing, used as a literal, like, oh, need you nothing, you know, just literally you need do nothing. And that's not what it's saying. So we're going to read a little bit more again about some of the backstory behind this teaching as it had come through during Helen's dictation. So cameo 27, I need do nothing. The text section, I need do nothing, which is in chapter 22, a profound exploration of several key course themes, as well as a comparison of the course's path to other paths, was originally a special message to Helen about a specific situation in her life. Ken Wapnick tells the story in Absence from Felicity. So this is a snippet from that book, Absence from Felicity. On May 31st, 1967, Helen was in the midst of another crisis, and Jesus's answer to her was a special message. Helen's crisis, because I relate to it so much. Helen's crisis, which on an external level was literally a non-event, revolved around a threatened union strike that would have involved the elevator operators in Helen's building. She and Lewis lived on the 16th floor, and Helen's fear was that the strike would begin at a time when she and Lewis would be separated, one of them in the apartment and the other down below. Since in Helen's mind, walking up or down the 16 flights of stairs meant instant cardiac arrest for either her or Lewis, she was beside herself at the imminent threat of separation. Having thus defined the problem, her solution was obvious and logical. She and Lewis would move to a nearby hotel. They did, where they remained for a week, never knowing that the strike was called off even before it had begun. So I'm not laughing at Helen. I'm laughing because that is something anxious Corinne would have done. And I've been in many situations where the event, the crisis was a non-event, but it was purely, you know, happening in my head and I was freaking out about it. So that's my giggling. And I'm sure we can all relate. I'm seeing many smiles too. The I need do nothing. Okay, so that's the end of that quote from the book. The I need do nothing section doesn't refer to the specifics of Helen's situation at all, but that is not to say it does not speak to it. What wisdom does it offer then about Helen's crisis? Its opening paragraph suggests that all of her planning for her body's comfort or protection or enjoyment means that her underlying goal is not atonement, but sin. Her preoccupation with her body is the conscious expression of an unconscious attraction to sin. After all, how can you tune out the entire sonship in an obsession with your own tiny lump of clay and not feel sinful? Thus, the hidden goal of feeling sinful, Jesus implies, is the real driving force behind Helen's plan to move to the nearby hotel. So I want to actually pause here just for a moment because it is quite a change of mind. I'm going to read this sentence that I underlined. Her preoccupation with her body is the conscious expression of an unconscious attraction to sin. So being someone who previously had like obsessive fears and concerns and preoccupations with my own body, because I used to, you know, every little ache or pain meant some kind of horrible disease. That's this sentence is saying that that's an unconscious attraction to sin. Yikes. It certainly doesn't seem that way, right? But when we're preoccupied with the body, this is saying it's an unconscious attraction to sin. After all, how can you tune out the entire sonship in an obsession with your own tiny lump of clay and not feel sinful? So it's like, you know, we're totally obliterating from our awareness the truth and instead focusing on our tiny lumps of clay, and we feel guilty about that. So that's where the guilt is. So next paragraph, what should she do instead? Rather than embroiling herself in plans to protect herself from the danger of the strike, she should allow herself a single instant
in which she utterly forgets her body, and along with it, the past and the future. She should enter a moment of perfect stillness, both physical and mental. In this moment, instead of concentrating on what to do, she should concentrate on a single thought, I need do nothing. This means that all the truly important things do not need to be accomplished by physical doings. They have already been accomplished by God. I just want to say a few things about this paragraph too. Notice that it says in the second sentence, she should allow herself a single instant in which she utterly forgets her body. We don't stay there. It's a single instant. It's one single instant. It doesn't need to be an ongoing knowing, you know, that we just forget the body, that we walk around thinking that we're not bodies. It's a single instant. That's all. And that's all that is asked. And I want to just speak to entering a moment of perfect stillness. So if we can just utterly forget the body and the past and the future for just a single instant and enter into this moment of perfect stillness, what I feel moved to say at this moment is that we often have an idea that that needs to look a certain way. So for instance, that needs to happen. This is the idea that should look like me sitting down in a meditation and having this incredible experience. And yet I've had many moments of entering perfect stillness where I've been on a walk, or I've been driving my car, or I've been doing something where my body is, you know, occupied. And then my mind has, a moment of this stillness. And that's why, to tie this into just what we were speaking about previously at some point about the anxiety experience, that once we reach a certain threshold, sometimes if the anxiety is too much, we need an interruption from it. We need like a distraction. If it's tolerable, we can be with it and look at it with the Holy Spirit. But when we need an interruption, I feel like this is almost speaking about that interruption. We need to interrupt the plans to protect yourself from the danger of the strike. We need an interruption from whatever we are obsessing about, fixating on our body, being preoccupied with the body. We need an interruption in order to enter that perfect stillness just for a single instant. But I just want to remind us that how we do that is going to look different, you know, for each of us. It does not mean it has to be during your meditation or while you're reading the course. It can be in any situation. This moment, okay, I'm continuing to read. This moment of stillness is what the course calls a holy instant. Yet how would entering a holy instant solve the emergency Helen sees before her? The answer to that question reveals itself in the final paragraphs of the section. In the holy instant, she would make a place inside her in which she does nothing, being perfectly still. Into this place, Jesus says, the Holy Spirit comes and there abides. Even though such a holy instant is typically brief, its effects would not be. Even after Helen returns to normal consciousness, the Holy Spirit would remain in that quiet place within her, giving her a place of rest to which you can return, presumably in future holy instants. So I'm going to pause here again really quick. In the holy instant, it's about just making a space inside of us in which we do nothing. We're perfectly still. That's where we meet the Holy Spirit. And it might be a very brief instant, but the effects would not be. The Holy Spirit stays in that quiet place. We can return to that quiet place even in the midst of a storm. It's always that space to which we can return. And I'll keep reading in just a moment, but does anybody have any comments or questions so far? Okay, we're good. Let's keep reading. Yet the value of this place of rest is not confined to isolated holy instants. The section concludes with a mesmerizing picture of Helen going through life in a dual consciousness. The image for this is that of a hurricane, with its furious winds revolving around the stillness of its eye. The eye of the storm, which Jesus calls the quiet center, symbolizes that place of rest within, while the storm symbolizes the outer activity of Helen's life. The message is that, once the quiet center is established in a holy instant, Helen will be able to have her attention in both places at once. She will be able to engage in doing in the storm at the exact same time she does nothing in the quiet center. I want to read that one more time. She will be able to engage in doing in the storm at the exact time as she does nothing in the quiet center. That's so important. In other words, outer activity need not entail the sacrifice of inner peace. Indeed, while being active in the storm, most of Helen's mind can be resting in the eye of the storm. End quote, and you will be more aware of the quiet center of the storm than all its raging activity. This can be a very attractive image, given how ravaged most of us feel by the hurricane. From this image, however, one could easily get the impression that Helen's behavior in the storm should be minimal and casual, that she should just do whatever she feels like, whenever she feels like it, while she mainly just relaxes in the quiet center. The section, however, concludes on a very different note. And the course quote is, "This quiet center in which you do nothing will remain with you, giving you rest in the midst of every busy doing on which you are sent. For from this center will you be directed how to use the body sinlessly. It is the center from which the body is absent that will keep it so." In other words, keep the body sinless in your awareness of it. Notice how, from the quiet center, Helen will be sent and directed. Her activity in the storm is not supposed to be whatever she feels like. It is supposed to be guided. And it is also not meant to be the minimum, the phrase, every busy doing on which you are sent, implies she will be sent on an abundance of such missions. The consolation is that while she is sent on those busy doings, the quiet center will be providing her with a place of rest in the midst of them. Even while she is up to her eyeballs in doing within the storm, she will simultaneously be doing nothing in the eye of the storm. We're going to pause here. So this in more recent years is how just the course has really come together for me in my mind, that in, for me, again, somebody might disagree or have a different perspective about this, but for me, the way that I feel called now in being a miracle worker in the world is not just for me to just keep my mind focused on the truth and just literally hang out there and do nothing. It says elsewhere in the course that, you know, God sends his miracle workers into the world to help save it. And what strikes me now is just feeling that that's what I'm here to do. It's about us extending love to our brothers. It's about maybe getting involved in things that are happening in the world, but not forgetting the truth the whole time. We're not losing the truth. We know what that truth is. We know that there's that quiet center that's always there that we can return to at any given moment. And it's interesting. I feel like I'm starting to, again, really have more of an experience of this dual consciousness that it starts out talking about in the very last paragraph on page 1838. This section concludes, it says, with a mesmerizing picture of Helen going through life in a dual consciousness. So there's the storm and the quiet center, and we can be in both simultaneously. We can be involved and learning our lessons and engaged in whatever it is that we are called to be engaged in, and at the same time, resting in the Holy Spirit and knowing that the Holy Spirit has got this, and that we can recharge our battery in the quiet, calm center of that storm. So are there any comments or questions so far? Anything, any sentences that stand out to you? I just love this teaching.
Corinne?
Yes.
I had an experience on Thursday. that is really about this. I've been dealing with the bank. It's been very stressful. I feel like I'm doing the banker's job. At any rate, there was a lien on the mortgage. It had to be corrected. I went out to Freehold. This was a back and forth situation. I didn't know. It was very confusing to me, but I had to have this mortgage recorded. This was all just a mistake on the bank's part, but I had to go to Freehold and have and actually have it done. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, the information that the bank gave me was the wrong information. And I absolutely just sort of fell apart in my own mind. Mm-hmm. And I was dry, and they were very, the county clerk was wonderful. She was so helpful, told me exactly what to do. I'm driving home having this perceptual temper tantrum. But in the back of my mind, I was observing it. Mm-hmm. When I got home, I did exactly what she told me to do. I made this phone call. And I just thought this was so interesting, because I'm thinking to myself, when I make this phone call, they're not even going to know what I'm talking about. That there's been so much confusion. I just thought, oh, here we go again. But somehow I just kept sticking with that quiet place, even though I was having a fit. I picked up the phone, made the phone call. This woman said, oh, Paula, she said, I'm so sorry. I sent you the wrong information. She said, I've corrected it. The correct information is in the mail and you will have it by Saturday. That was so miraculous. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost wondering, is that the benefit of just the realization of that quiet place? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It just seemed, because I am determined to process whatever is bothering me. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And believe me, sometimes I'm not, I can get really crazy. Uh-huh. And yet there is that knowing. That just that knowing,
right?
But this
right.
is going to be all right,
right? And I do think that absolutely plays a factor in, again, miracles are about saving time. So I feel like that plays a factor in it working out. Like, time can collapse. Sometimes we can see that it seems to work out, you know, much more quickly. I'm careful because, you know, then we can be in other situations where it seems like no matter what I do, you know, no matter how much I turn to Holy Spirit, nothing's happening, nothing's changing. And that can just be because that's, we're learning patience. We're learning how to hold steady. You know, there's other factors too. It doesn't mean we're doing it quote unquote wrong, but I absolutely think, Paula, that has everything, you know, to do with it, is that dual awareness and that ability to hold steady. We've talked about numbers. We've been talking to Deidre a lot about seeing numbers. And I can't remember, I honestly can't remember if I've shared this on the call already, but I've been writing down for weeks now, every time I see, it's happening almost, it's been happening every day, at least three times a day for the past 2 weeks, where I see 11, 11, 444, 11, 11, 333, you know, and I'm writing it down now. And the message that just comes with that for me is hold steady. It's like, yeah, just remember that I have that calm center. Just hold steady, hold steady, hold steady. That's all you need to do. And so that's been my little experience that I've had lately. But I agree with you, Paula, that awareness, that dual awareness is everything.
I really believe that's the benefit of working with this material, mm-hmm. ongoing working with the material, mm-hmm. because it becomes a real recognition in your mind somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's not about denying your emotions or your feelings. You right. know, it's really allowing that. Well, he talks about going through those clouds.
Right. Yes, yes. And that's where we might notice in our own experience, and I do notice this for me, that things that would have really triggered me into a tailspin before they're not as much of a trigger now. They can, it can come up and it's like, oh, okay, here we go again. Let's dive into this again. Whereas before it would have been like, what, you know, and a big deal. So we also see that change within ourselves, that what used to really rattle our peace is now not, you know, we're still able to hold our peace despite what the circumstances are. So thank you, Paula. I love your stories. I love your examples. Anybody else? Nikki.
Hey, Corinne. Hi. Thank you for having us.
Oh, thanks for being here.
So I had an experience with a client. I have a policy. I'm very upfront. Somebody, you have signed paperwork for this policy, and somebody broke the policy. And when I went to, you know, fix on my end, I had the wrong information. So now it was going to be a phone call, which could have been like a confrontation, which are not my favorite things to do, especially in work. So I kept just doing Reiki and asking Holy Spirit, right? So last night when I went to sleep, I was like, okay, I'm having a hard time sleeping. There's two things on my mind. I was literally doing crossword puzzles and mentally going, Holy Spirit, I give this to you. Hold it over and over, right? When it's so intense, Holy Spirit, I give it to you. Wasn't settling, right? Couldn't hardly sleep all night, but I wasn't obsessed with trying to find the answer. I really kept trusting, like, Holy Spirit, I know you got me, right? And the only thing that really happened was I slept, and when I woke up, I had like a lot of insight to do spiritual work on myself, which I did. Mm-hmm. And I felt peaceful with not having an answer, right? Mm-hmm. So then one thing led to another, and something shifted with this client. I wound up having to now take them in sooner than I would 2 weeks earlier, because I was like, Holy Spirit, we've got 3 weeks to work on this. I know an answer's coming. Now she's going to be here Tuesday. And when I got on the call and Paula was telling her story, I was like, yeah, I still don't feel at peace with the resolution that's come. There's still more in here for me. Like Paula said, I'm a big processor too. So I was going to ask you, what do you do when you're not really at peace with the solution, but you're at peace with trusting Holy Spirit, but of course it's coming in Holy Spirit's time. But then you said something and it made me think that, oh, what I'm supposed to do is go deeper and now give up my disliking of what's shown up now. It's like,
you got it.
There's a movie or a TV show. Now, like the next. So like next onion layer. So I guess my big beef isn't so much with the client anymore. My big beef is with like, Holy Spirit, you didn't make it go the way I wanted. Right. So now I have to give that to you. Is that correct?
Yes, you got it. Yep, you got it. You're answering your own question. That's absolutely it. Because it's whatever our expectation is, that can go into the Holy Spirit's hands too. And Nikki, you said something. This is my own words based on what you just said. This is like a key lesson. Fixate on the Holy Spirit instead of the problem. Fixate on the Holy Spirit instead of the problem. Center the Holy Spirit. I have that actually written on my wall, and that's because Freedom from the Loved Ones keeps saying, like, you know, she keeps centering the Holy Spirit in the center of everything that we're doing. So that's kind of been another way of saying this, is just centering the Holy Spirit. Fixate on the Holy, but fixate relates to my, you know, the part of me that used to fixate a lot related to anxiety. So fixate on the Holy Spirit instead of the problem. So
I love that.
And that's what you're doing.
Excited that that showed up, because I'm so Reiki, but also I know that part of my role as Reiki is, you know, it is a little problem solving. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I was sitting there yesterday and I was like, Holy Spirit, I was like, Holy Spirit, you and I. So I thought of you guys and couldn't wait to share that. But yeah, I'm just going to keep putting it up and say, here, Holy Spirit, you know that I'm still not completely loving this, you know?
Yep. More layers, another onion layer coming up, and absolutely hand that over too. So that's beautiful, Nikki. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you for having us every Sunday, and thank you for everybody who shares. Aww, thank you.
Yeah.
And who doesn't? Thank you.
Yes. Everybody. Thank you, Nikki. Oh, so, okay, let's keep reading. We are at the bottom of page 1839. So this cameo 27, bottom of page 1839, we're going to start with a paragraph that begins with, yet even that is not the real consolation. So that's where we shall begin. We have a few pages to go. Yet, okay, so just to remind us that it says that the quiet center provides Helen with a place of rest, even in the midst of the storm. So she's again having this like dual consciousness, and so we're picking up now. Yet even that is not the real consolation. Remember, this story starts with Helen's obsession with her physical safety, comfort, and enjoyment. In this initial picture, her doings are to a large degree about protecting her body from the damaging effects of the storm. And this overriding concern with her separate self has the net effect, as well as the unconscious goal, of making her feel sinful. Can we all relate to that when we think we're just like done something bad, that like we're not getting it, we beat ourselves up? That's what making ourselves feel sinful brings. Notice how that picture has now been completely reversed. In the new picture, her doings are not about protecting her body from the storm. They are about serving those who are being buffeted by its wind and rain. In this picture, she is no longer running off on self-absorbed projects. Rather, she is being sent on selfless missions. Rather than using the body to serve the goal of sin, she is being directed how to use the body sinlessly. And all of this is true because at the center of her awareness, in the quiet center, the body is absent. In that place of ultimate concern, the body has vanished, having been replaced by the Holy Spirit. As a result, she now sees herself as sinless, as absolutely clean and unstained. She even sees her body as sinless. How else could she see it, given that it has become a pure instrument of God's holiness? Here then is a vision in which the inescapable doing entailed in our outer lives is harmonized with the non-doing entailed in inner stillness. It's not a case of one or the other. Rather, by resting from doing in particular holy instance, we can ground a way of being in which, even while we are engaged in outer doing, we are resting in a place of non-doing within. And significantly, this place of non-doing now becomes the source of our doing, of a very different kind of doing. If Helen had embraced this picture, think how differently she would have responded to her situation. By entering into a holy instant, she could have felt her fear being calmed in the quiet center within her. With great relief, she could have realized that nothing real rested on her doing. Her anxious preoccupation with her body could have evaporated. From this calmer place, she could have seen through her fears. From this new perspective, rather than making frantic plans for her safety, she could have asked how she was called to serve a larger plan. And as her vision expanded to encompass its broader priorities, the fear and needless planning that had gripped her before would have been all but forgotten. She could have been about her Father's business, striding forward at peace within the storm and at peace about herself. This is what the beginning and ending paragraphs of the section imply about Helen's crisis. However, the middle of the section is a kind of interlude that steps further away from Helen's situation in order to illuminate some of the course's unique character. For there are other routes to lifting the oppressive sense of sinfulness that inevitably comes from prioritizing one's body. And Helen was no stranger to these other routes, having had a lifelong fascination with the Catholic Church, particularly with its rituals of the Rosary and the Mass. So actually, I'm going to pause here just for a moment. We'll read this in just a moment, but since this is shifting, I just want to go back to what we just read. I'm trying to remember what I wanted to comment on. just that, again, this place of non-doing, so this quiet center of the storm now becomes the source of our doing, because as we slow down and check in from that place prompts us on what to do. It prompts us on what to say, to whom. That's our new way of being in the world, is from this place of non-doing. I love the first sentence of that paragraph that I'm referencing. It's the second paragraph on this page of 1840. Here then is a vision in which the inescapable doing entailed in our outer lives is harmonized with the non-doing entailed in inner stillness. So it's not one or the other, it's both, that we will be called to be busy and to be involved in things in the world. And yet it's a new way of doing that from this place of inner stillness and non-doing. And doesn't it sound nice? Again, I just so relate this reading tonight to the experience of anxiety, because obviously Helen's situation that we read about in the beginning of this cameo was very anxiety driven. But entering into a holy instant, it says, I'm on the third paragraph that we just read on page 1840. By entering into a holy instant, she could have felt her fear being calmed in the quiet center within her. That's what we're looking for when we're in an anxiety spin out, is a way of having those fears calmed and being returning to that quiet center to feel restored, to feel our sense of grounding and our sense of peace again. And when I say, and I've said this in the past, that I used to use the course as a band-aid, where I'd run to the course and find a passage and calm me down. And that's really what was happening, is that I don't want to, say that that's a negative thing. It was how I needed to be in my beginning journey of the course, because that helped me get back to the quiet center. But as always, whenever we think we've taken the course as far as we can pretty much be 100% assured that no, you know, we never get it right when we think we do. We can always go deeper with it. Before I keep reading, are there any comments or questions? Any sentences that stand out to you?
Hey, Karen.
Hi, Uma. How are you?
I'm good. So this is that paragraph that you were just going back over about, you know, a vision in which the inescapable doing, that paragraph is really speaking to me, because the whole relationship between non-doing and doing, mm-hmm. I go in and out of right relationship with that relationship. Like, uh-huh. I have really struggled a lot with like perfectionism and procrastination. And I've been thinking about, so I just was recently reading like chapter 2 and the reinterpretation of defenses. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I really love about that section is how instead of saying like, don't do these defenses, like, don't use denial, don't use, you know, distanciation, don't use dissociation. He says to repurpose it and to use denial to deny error, and to use, you know, withdrawal to withdraw from, you know, ego thinking. And I really like that. And I just started thinking like, okay, well, how could I repurpose something like perfectionism for like a holy purpose? You know, like what is the other side of that defense? You know, it's something to do with knowing like perfect love or something like that. I don't know. But today, just this morning, I was asking about what is a way that I can look at procrastination? Because that's the particular prison that I find myself in at the moment, where I'm really struggling against things that I want to create and I'm not doing it. And I'm just like, just give me a way to think about this so that it's not, don't do procrastination, but rather, what if this is a misplaced desire for non-doing, but this type of non-doing, if that makes sense, like a very different type of, not the type that's a miscreation, but the type where it's actually like a return to true non-doing, and then action can come from that. And that's kind of what I'm getting from this paragraph. So it's like, I asked this morning and then I feel like it's coming to me in that paragraph. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, Uma, that's so powerful and beautiful and very helpful for all of us to think about what are those habits that we have, those defenses, and how can they be repurposed? So I love that you just brought that together. The other, so I love everything that you just said.
The other piece that just came to mind reminds me of the section on true empathy, where we're asked to give our capacity to empathize to the Holy Spirit to be used properly. Because if we use empathy, you know, ourselves, we can side with weakness and reinforce it. So what also came to mind to me too, is to give your capacity for perfectionism, for procrastination, to give that to the Holy Spirit and have the Holy Spirit, you know, tell us how to use that, how to repurpose that. But like you said already, it sounds like you're getting exactly what you need to hear through the reading. So that's awesome.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's really, really beautiful. Oh, okay. Let's keep reading. We have about 10 minutes left. And so that's going to be perfect to finish this up and probably to chat for a few minutes. So I'm at the very top of page 1841. This is now, we're sort of shifting into this interlude that is highlighting some of the course's unique character. Top of page 1841. In this middle section, Jesus highlights two traditional routes to escaping one's sense of sinfulness and contrasts both of these with the course's way. The first route, which reminds one of Catholicism and of Western spirituality in general, is wrestling with temptation and fighting against giving into sin. An obvious attempt to almost muscularly restrain one's sinful nature. The second route, which sounds more like Eastern mysticism, involves, quote, long periods of meditation aimed at detachment from the body. Though Jesus sounds more kindly disposed toward this latter approach, he implies that it too is a subtle attempt to climb above one's sinfulness. In this case, through long periods of detaching from the supposed source of sin, the body. Both ways, he says, will succeed. Quote, but the means are tedious and very time-consuming, for all of them look to the future for release from a present state of unworthiness and inadequacy. Both assume, in other words, that one is sinful now, and that one's own efforts are needed to arduously hoist oneself up inch by inch above this fallen state. Jesus then says, your way will be different, not in purpose, but in means. The goal is still that realization of the state of holiness. But this is reached by letting go all attempts to make oneself holy, and entering instead into a moment of stillness by dwelling on the thought, I need do nothing. In this case, that means I need do nothing to make myself holy because God already created me holy for all eternity. I want to read that one more time. In this case, that means I need do nothing to make myself holy because God already created me holy for all eternity. Jesus then mentions another distinguishing feature of the course's path. It is not a solitary journey. In both the West and the East, the common image is that of a lone aspirant. Aspirant? How do you say that? Aspirant? We envision the monk wrestling with temptation in the privacy of his cell and the yogi absorbed in meditation in his solitary cave. In the course, however, the most powerful way to discover one's holiness is to join with another person. A holy relationship, this is the quote, a holy relationship is a means of saving time. One instant spent together restores the universe to both of you. Time has been saved for you because you are together. This is the special means this course is using to save you time. And I'm just going to keep reading in the interest of time, and then we'll talk about this. So we have two distinguishing features of the course: uncovering pre-existing holiness in a holy instant and joining with another person in a holy relationship. Both of these come together in the idea of joint holy instants that we share with another human being. The course also calls these holy encounters. The reference above to one instant spent together
refers to exactly this concept. Indeed, the Course was born in just such a shared holy instant, in which, after years of conflict, Bill made an impassioned speech that there must be another way. And Helen jumped up and said she would try this new approach with him. That moment was not a mystical experience, but it was a powerful holy instant, one that changed both of their lives forever. Such shared holy instants are not an emphasis in either the West or the East. They are the Course's unique focus, the special means this Course is using to save you time. Getting back to Helen's situation, if she wanted to be free of the sense of sinfulness that came with her obsessive concern with her body, the answer was not to pull out her rosary or go to Mass. The answer was to join with Bill in another joint holy instant, where they would both realize in hushed silence that, as Jesus put it later, healing is done, for what is perfect needs no healing, and what remains to be forgiven where there is no sin. In just one such instant of joining, Jesus promises Helen and Bill could accomplish more than is given to a century of contemplation or of struggle against temptation. The section, "I need do nothing," did speak to Helen's specific crisis, but in the process, it also did so much more. It offered her a new relationship with her worries, her body, her behavior, and her guilt. And it clarified how the path that Jesus was leading her down differed from more traditional routes, including the Catholicism that so attracted her. Its profound message was applicable beyond her specific situation to all of her situations, and beyond hers to all of ours. The dictation for this section appeared in Helen's notes in the midst of the first section of chapter 24, but it clearly was inserted there from somewhere else. In terms of its date and placement in the urtext, it falls exactly where we have placed it in the complete and annotated edition. After the urtext, Helen and Bill moved it to a much earlier place, to a place in chapter 18. That placement, which we see in the FIP version of the Course, is an excellent placement in that many of the section's themes are echoed in that chapter. However, the section also contains themes that do not appear until after chapter 18. For instance, the goal of sin, so important in this section, does not appear in the dictation until the extended discussion of sin in chapter 19. The quote, "the ego has dedicated the body to the goal of sin." What we found was that this section also fits quite well where it originally fell in chapter 22, where it lacks the problem of anachronistic themes. So we decided to simply leave it where it was. Anachronistic themes. So we decided to simply leave it where it was. All right. So we finished this cameo. I just want to review, I ferociously circled a couple of things. I shouldn't say ferociously, enthusiastically circled a few things that we've read just now. Two distinguishing features that make the Course the Course. Uncovering our present holiness in a holy instant. So it's already there. We don't have to do anything to get holy. We already are holy. And we can join with another person in holy relationship. That it's the relationship piece in which we join with another human being, which is called a holy encounter. These things are what make the Course unique. So what stands out to me from reading this is a reminder that when I'm struggling, one of the best things that we can do when any of us is struggling, one of the best things we can do, this is where I love having just like a Course in Miracles friend or somebody, or even just here in this group, just to have somebody to just hold steady with you, just someone to just say, okay, rather than pump energy right now into this fear or into this situation, can we join in just remembering the truth? And that is so incredibly powerful for two or more people to come together to agree that, you know, there's no gap between us, that the truth is true, and that
can lift us out of the battleground in which we are struggling. And it's, again, that relationship piece that makes the course so unique. So I really like this cameo. I feel like, yeah, it's really good. Comments, questions? Anything that stands out to you? Sentences? Or are we good?
Hey, Corinne, I have a quick question.
Hi, Jason.
I'm pretty new, so this might be a silly question, but the holy relationship, does someone else have to be on kind of a similar trajectory with their spiritual path in order to have a holy relationship? Because most people I know, even my friends, are not, they have no idea that right. This is all illusion.
Right. Oh, that's a great question, actually. And it's a common question too. If we think about how Helen and Bill started, where, you know, they entered into like a holy instant together where they just decided there's got to be another way. And yes, like we're joining together to do this. They didn't believe in the Holy Spirit. They weren't even course, you know, the course hadn't even come through at that time. And yet they invited the Holy Spirit in. So I do not believe that you have to have somebody who's like on the Course in Miracles pathway to have that holy relationship. What is necessary though, is as the Course says, you know, that desire to, what does it say about separate interests? To like lose interest in separate interests where you're joining together on a higher purpose. I don't think that the form or the language needs to be Course language or a Course pathway. Of course, it always can make it a little easier, but I don't think that, and it also says too, elsewhere in the course, that you might have holy relationships that are quite tumultuous, that are quite difficult. And, you know, those can be holy as well and quite intense teaching and learning situations. So the short answer to your question is no, I don't think that they have to be a course student. It certainly in some ways can make it easier, but it's not required. That's a great question. I think a lot of people also, another common question is just thinking about, you know, the special and the holy relationship. We tend to limit it to like a romantic relationship when that's not what it is either. It absolutely is just any relationship.
Corinne?
Yes.
Hi, this is Tanya. That was a good question. Hi, and I really appreciated everybody's comments, that last question, what I think it was Dave read in the beginning. This has been rich and good, and thank you, everyone. I have a question about what you were just saying about relationships. Do you know of, or could you recommend any books that are aligned with our practice that deal with relationships like that?
The first book that comes to mind, which I haven't read yet, and I think it's not like light reading, is Nook Sanchez's second book on, what is it called? I'm blanking on the name. Does anybody know it? It's her second book on, is it just A Manual for Holy Relationship? That's what it's called. A Manual for Holy Relationship by Nook Sanchez. As I said, I don't think it's easy reading. It's about as thick as A Course in Miracles. But does anybody else have any other recommendations that relate to holy relationships and the Course? That's another book on my reading list. But oh my gosh, I looked at the size and I was like, good grief.
What popped up for me was Return to Love by Marianne Williamson. Mm-hmm.
That's always a good one. Thank you, Cheryl. If I think of any others, Tanya, I'll let you know.
Okay, thanks, Corinne. Yeah. Thanks, Cheryl. Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much again, as always, for being here. This is always so much fun. And it does feel right, just since some of you have asked where we're going next, we are getting toward the end of the cameos. I definitely feel moved to go into the Manual for Teachers next. So that's what we'll do. It won't matter which edition that you have, because I believe they're all very, very similar. But yeah, that's what we'll do in a few weeks after we finish up these cameos.
Excellent.
Yay. I love you all. Thank you so much for being here. Heart hands.
Thank you.
thank you,
Corinne.
Thanks, everyone. Love you all. I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Corinne.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.